we have these themes, and I think we've been on this theme that we're on right now, which is the Noble Eightfold Path, for probably over a year. And so this path in Buddhism is the path that leads to freedom from suffering, to awakening. And the name says it's the Eightfold Path is 8 steps, and I just call them out, and we've covered a lot of them already. But they are wise view, wise intention, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. And so right now we are at wise mindfulness, and sometimes it's also translated as right. So each of these steps is right, mindfulness, right, concentration, etc. And so I gave an overview talk a while ago on wise or right mindfulness. And today I want to dive a little deeper into this subject. This in itself can be a whole theme, I think, right mindfulness. And so when the Buddha speaks about wise mindfulness, he basically refers to the 4 foundations or 4 establishments of mindfulness. And those are laid out in a sutta called the Satipatthana Sutta. And this means the 4 establishments of mindfulness. Or 4 foundations of mindfulness. And the 4 foundations are the body, is the first one. Talk about that one today. Feeling tone, or in Pali, Vedana, is the second one. This is different than feelings, but I'll get to that probably next week. And we get mind states, is the third one. So the realm of the mind, which is the sixth sense door in Buddhism, like aversion, craving, delusion, distraction, contraction, that kind of things, that's all in that establishment of mindfulness. And then the 4th one is called Dhammas, and that's a little hard to translate, but it's a mind objects or principles, could be a translation. And it's basically, in that section of the sutta, there are lists of the Buddha's teachings, like the 5 hindrances and the 7 factors of awakening. And last week, Carolyn went into the 5 aggregates, the 5 khandhas. And so in this overview of wise mindfulness, some time ago, I offered all these, or I named all these different body practices that are mentioned in the Satipatthana Sutta. So I kind of gave an overview. And I won't go over all of these again. I just want to do more of a deep dive into 2 of them. The first one being mindfulness of breathing. And second one, the elements, which I just which you practiced with today. And I want to read you the part on mindfulness of breathing right from the sutta. It's slightly longish, so I hope it's okay. So this is from the sutta. It's when a practitioner bound to a wilderness or to the root of a tree or to an empty hut sits down cross-legged, sets their body straight, and establishes mindfulness in their presence. Just mindful, they breathe in. Mindful, they breathe out. Breathing in long, one understands, I breathe in long. Or breathing out long, one understands, I breathe out long. Breathing in short, one understands, I breathe in short. Breathing out short, one understands, I breathe out short. One trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing the whole body. One trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing the whole body. One trains thus, I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the bodily formation. One trains thus, I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the bodily formation. Just as a skilled late operator or his apprentice, when making a long turn, understands I make a long turn, or when making a short turn, understands I make a short turn, so too, breathing in long, one understands I breathe in long. And then the whole thing is repeated. And then he trains us, I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the bodily formation. That's how it ended. So that's the part from the sutta. So we can see here that this instruction on mindfulness of breathing is a bit more involved than what we usually think of when we do mindfulness of breathing. There's these very different kind of instructions basically about, you know, breathing in short, breathing in long, knowing that. The tranquilizing of the bodily formation, breathing, experiencing the whole body. So we can practice with all of this if we wish. This is all in the sutta, and so often we just breathe and we just notice the breath. That's it. But there are more nuances that we can practice with and that we can try out. And some teachers also emphasize that. Like some teachers really emphasize breathing, noticing the whole body, for example. And I also had a teacher that was teaching me about breathing in short and long, noticing that, not that you make it short and long, but you just notice, is it short or is it long? And so sometimes it can be very helpful to bring in these little things, these kind of aids to the practice. And so the part about breathing in and out, tranquilizing the body, or it says the bodily formation. Bhikkhu Bodhi is a scholar and a monk in our tradition. He mentions that the bodily formation is defined in the commentaries as the in and out breathing itself. So this is really interesting that the commentaries explain with successful development of the practice, the meditator's breathing becomes increasingly quiet, tranquil, and peaceful. And so, I don't know if this is true or not, but it can be interesting to practice with when we do the breath meditation, to notice how there is this tranquilizing effect of that on our bodies, on the breath itself. It can even become, like the breath can become so still that it seems like there's no breath happening at all, which can be really interesting as well, and sometimes scary. But it can happen like that. So just know that it can be that subtle when we start doing this practice intensively. And there are teachers like Thich Nhat Hanh who instruct things like that, right? Thich Nhat Hanh has instructions that I haven't practiced in his lineage, but I think he has something like, breathing in, I tranquilize, or calm the bodily formation, I calm my body, and breathing out, I calm my body, or these kind of phrases that he uses that can be really helpful. I instructed that today in the meditation too, so perhaps you've noticed if that worked for you. If it did, maybe it's something you can use in your practice. And so breath meditation is really this foundational practice often, and sometimes I run across people who think that, oh, that's the basic stuff. I'm more advanced, I don't need to do breath meditation anymore. But it keeps on being the foundation for all of our practice for probably the rest of our lives. We never get beyond this. I mean, we get beyond it, but it's always going to be the basis of practice. The breath's always going to be there. It's kind of this friend that we have that we can rely on. And perhaps good to say that not for everyone the breath is a friend in that sense, because sometimes people have, you know, certain bodily conditions like asthma or other things that breath is not so comfortable. And then there are plenty of other meditation objects in the sutta that we can use, including the elements, which I will come to in a little bit. And so the breath meditation, I often use that in the guided meditations, but also in my own practice, as a way to settle the mind. And that's also kind of one of the benefits of breath meditation. It settles us because we pay attention to one thing, and it really is helpful to settle. And same with the walking meditation, we just settle with just noticing this one thing of the foot moving. And when we do that, when we direct our attention in that way, it can be very very, very helpful and a good ground, good basis for opening to whatever else is arising. So once the mind is settled a little bit, you can start opening up to other things, like today we did with body sensations, and I often guide also with all the six sense doors, opening to all the six sense doors from that place of a little bit more settledness. And it's also okay to just stay with the breath for the whole meditation if we wish. So there's no right or wrong, it's just that when we do open to other sensations and experiences, and including the mind, that we start to learn and grow from our conditioning that we start to see. And that can be very beneficial. And then the breath can always be our anchor and be there for us when we need it, when we get unsettled, so to speak. So then the second body practice that I want to highlight is the mindfulness of the four elements, which is also named in the suttas. And it's this practice that that can be done by itself. You can also do this as your grounding practice. Like, for example, when the breath's not a good place for you. And it's, besides it, that you can do it as a practice in itself, it's also something that arises naturally in our practice, because when we start to open up to our bodily sensations, this is what we're going to experience, these four elements. I will read you the text from the sutta. Practitioners. A practitioner reviews this same body, however it is placed, however disposed, by way of elements thus. In this body there are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element. Just as though a skilled butcher or his apprentice had, okay, this is a little graphic, had killed a cow and was seated at the crossroads with it cut up into pieces, so too a practitioner reviews the same body, and then it repeats this section again, by way of the elements thus. In this body there are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element. And I like to keep this simile in there with the butcher and the cow, because it gives us kind of an image, even though it's a little graphic, of how this works. Our body, just like when a cow is cut into pieces, like we see them in the supermarket, you know, there's, you know, there's different types of meat available, and we don't think about it like, oh, that's a cow, right? We think, oh, that's meat that I'm gonna eat. I'm almost vegan, but I don't eat that, but back in the day I did. And so same with this body, it's made up out of these elements. And so if we start to investigate, what is this body? Is it my arm? Is it my leg? Is it my eye? What, you know, how do you know that where your body begins and where it ends? And what, like, another graphic image is, what if you start chopping off parts of your body? Like, when does it stop being your body? Right? It's like this made up thing. And the body, the Buddha points to that the body is actually made up out of these tiny little elements, just like they discovered in science later. And the Buddha is defined these by these terms of earth, water, fire, and air. But in a way, it doesn't really matter what, you know, label you put on it. It is the core teaching is that there's these tiny little elements that the body is made up of, and if we split up the body into these different elements, then, you know, they're just elements. And just like the outside world, he says, is also just made up out of these same elements. And it's also what science is telling us nowadays, like there's just these molecules, and I'm not really a physicist. all these molecules and whatnot, you know, that make up our world and also our bodies. And so this is basically that teaching, what science is figuring out. And like I mentioned in the meditation today, the earth element traditionally said is made up out of hardness and softness, heaviness and lightness, and roughness and smoothness. And then the water element is made out of flowing and cohesion. And the cohesion part, you can imagine, like, if you're making dough and you put water in it, that's how it binds, right? That's how the cohesion happens. So that's the water element with its cohesive property. Then the fire element, heat and cold. And the air element is the movement, like I said, but also what's called supporting. So supporting element of, like, sitting upright, for example. And so just to get a sense of each element, like right now, you might be able to feel the hardness of the sit bones on your seat. Or perhaps there's some softness somewhere, like your hands touching each other. Perhaps you even feel the softness of your seat, like the softness of the chair, for example. And then the saliva in your mouth, the water element. The temperature in your body, which is different in different places. You might notice that there's different temperature in different places of your body. It's a fire element. And then the air element, there are all the small little movements, and the uprightness of the body, the breath. And so when we are sitting or walking, we can notice these elements. And all throughout the day, we can notice. And we don't have to use these exact words. We can just use whatever words, like tingling or pressure, you know, throbbing, or whatever words feel, you know, most resonant for us. We can use those words. It's not necessarily about those labels. It's more about the direct experience of the body. And so in this way, it kind of comes naturally, like I said. So if we just sit and there's some pressure somewhere, we notice pressure, or there's some hardness, we notice hardness, or there's coolness, we notice coolness. But we can also do a dedicated four elements meditation. And if we want to do that, you can do, for example, a body scan, where you go through the body noticing all the earth element aspects, or all the water element or fire element, etc. It's going up and down through the body, noticing these elements. That can be one way and one variation. And I know that there's this monk and scholar called Pico Analio. He has a variation of this too, of how he uses body scans to explore the elements. And that's online. He has a meditation online for that. And so this teaching on the elements can seem kind of, interesting, nice, I can feel that, great. But there's actually a very deep layer to it, which touches the core teachings of the Buddha. And in one sutta, the Buddha talks to his son Rahula, and he says, both the internal earth element and the external earth element, and he's going to say this about all the elements, are simply earth element. And that should be seen as it actually is, with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. When one sees it thus as it actually is with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the earth element and makes the mind dispassionate towards the earth element. And so this is really a deep teaching that these elements that our body is made up of, these elements that the world are made up of, are simply these elements. They're simply these molecules, or these particles, or these, however you want to call them. They're not us. And so if we want to say, oh, this little, you know, element in the top of my finger, that's me, you know, we can't really say that, because if what if the little molecule flakes off, you know, it's not us anymore, right? And so what if, like right now we think our saliva is us. What if we spit it out? Is it us? You know, probably not. So like we breathe in the air, at that moment it becomes us, and then we breathe it out, but then it's not us anymore. So it's kind of this illusion that we have that these elements are us. It's kind of convenient to see it that way, right? But in reality, it's just kind of this exchange, continuous exchange of this body with the external world. And so once we start to see that this body is just made up of out of not me, basically. And that can be a really deep practice, a deep teaching. just so we notice that these element, this teaching on the elements is can be very practical, very down to earth basically, but it can also be very deep teaching that we can bring us very far in our practice.